Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
The editorial, it is Wednesday, the 21st of September. The big news today is Putin is doing quite a bit of blustering, for lack of better terms, conscripting more troops in terms of the draft and telling the West they should take him very seriously when he says that he's going to use weapons of mass destruction if he needs to protect his territories. Jim, what are your comments on that?
Yeah, I think it's an unfortunate, actually it's a big challenge for Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
And the reason why he's beginning to face domestic questions, not personally still, but domestic questions with Russian media, which it's very difficult for them to, you know, to step out against anything the government's doing.
Yeah.
But also from even parliamentarians, and most of them are questioning the Ministry of Defense, the Russian Ministry of Defense, and the generals, and saying this is all, you know, their failures.
Mm-hmm.
When you force conscription and mobilization in order to fulfill your needs for a military, and you don't have a clear set of objectives, it actually becomes very problematic. And
well, do you think he doesn't have a clear set of objectives?
Yeah, I think you don't have a national agenda. You know, after 9/11, America had a national agenda. We're going to stop terrorism.
Right.
And then, you know, that kind of rolled into Iraq. And you saw the failures in Iraq because of a lack of a real clear vision of where to go. And then, of course, we just saw the complete failure in Afghanistan because no one actually took the reins and say, how are we going to end this thing with some sort of a victory? And it was just disintegrated. But the bigger agenda, I think, or the bigger experience to look at is what happened in Vietnam, where we did conscript and force soldiers into military service in Vietnam. We had a much more sophisticated military establishment than the Russians do, and I can tell you that from personal experience.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have an NCO corps. We have a very established NCO corps. Their NCO corps is it's a paid. You know, to be an NCO, you're paid, but they don't have the type of development and training and leadership responsibilities that Western, or at least the United States, does.
Okay.
That's a very important fact. They don't have a very sophisticated combined arms capability, meaning, you know, Air Force and Army, and, you know, the way they communicate and the way they are interoperable are actually very different. And that makes a big difference when you're actually on the battlefield, on the ground. You know, mm-hmm. We have problems with our own communications with Air Force and the Army. Yeah. They are far, far different from that. And they have different command structures that make it very difficult for them to manage. But they don't have a clear national positive, like protecting the nation from, you know, it's a vague, you know, the Nazis in Ukraine, the push towards globalization, the leftist encroachment through NATO, those issues really are difficult to force the population into believing as you're losing on the ground. And that's unfortunately what they're facing the reality with.
Well, but do you think the Russian people understand that they're losing on the ground in Ukraine?
Well, yes. I mean, that's what I'm saying. They actually, the media is now reporting it.
Yeah.
And you can look at, I look at the Johnson Report. Johnson Report is a very, it's a collective. It's, just a massive collective of Russian articles that are translated into English. Some of them are actually English-based. Some of them, anything related to what's going on there.
Okay.
And you're seeing direct questioning in major, even state sponsored media, which is unusual. It's actually unusual for the last 20 years to see that. So people are starting to see it. But more importantly, and I've said this from the beginning, a lot of these conscripts that were forced, mandated into service, they're dying there because they're basically lack of training and the lack of communications and kind of a weaker system of military leadership. And when they're dying, they're not coming home, and their parents are wondering where the hell they're supposed to be, you know, where they are.
Yeah.
They're not reporting casualties. They're significant casualties. And a lot of people are beginning to be real angry about that because of their own personal interests, you know, their family. So I think it's a very tough situation, and it shows a level of weakness that he has not been successful this far with his operation, that he is having to mobilize when he promised actually in March that he was not going to mobilize the nation. Mm-hmm. Vladimir Putin promised that he wouldn't because he said he wouldn't need to. That's clearly showing a level of failure. He's not actually getting a break in the West, other than, you know, people are really desperate for energy, and there are people still trading with Russia, and they are still making money on it. But the level of expenditure on this war is significant. And in spite of, you know, even those tacit supporters that are, you know, continuing to prop up with fuel energy prices, that he hasn't broken the will of Western Europeans, of EU. And the reason why is because they're afraid of him. So they're, you know, he's trying to intimidate them into some sort of he's trying to beat them into submission, but they're really, he's not powerful enough to do it, which is why he makes statements like at the end of his press conference where nuclear weapons are a possibility, and that's not a threat. It's an actual possibility.
Yeah.
Which is a very, very dangerous position to set yourself into, because, and this is the problem, you become too desperate, you've made that commitment, you can't bluff on that.
Why can't you bluff on it, Jim? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, I think he is. So here's the issue. He's saying that we will use this if we get that desperate, right? And he's trying to intimidate West and U.S. from, you know, from being involved.
Yeah.
And to back away. They're just more afraid of it. So you've put yourself in the bind. Well, then I may have to use it. But if you use it, you will be completely annihilating any possibility of survival of your regime, because they can't go to war with NATO. They can't go to war with the United States at a nuclear level and anybody survive.
Okay.
So that's one angle. But the other angle is, if you don't use it and you continue to have these, you know, if you continue to fail, then your administration is done because you've made the threat. So I think it's a very difficult position to be in. I think it's a sign of desperation. It's a sign of intimidation. And the reality is, I mean, Russians cannot compete with overall NATO forces. They just can't. I know a lot of people here just, you know, can't stand NATO, can't, you know, on our blog, they can't say it. But the bottom line is, it's far too powerful, way too much information. The only way, there's way too much firepower, organization, finances, logistics support for them to compete against the NATO act.
Yeah.
And if they use nuclear weapons, they're going to be NATO will actually, because it'll be a direct threat to the border nations, the NATO countries.
Mm-hmm.
The one potential, and this would be a very dark, and it's a possibility. I think it's a very limited possibility. If they do combine with China and make this type of a threat, and then they stand up to it, so China moves on Taiwan, and then you force the Biden regime to make some very difficult decisions on where they support, especially after this disastrous press conference on 60 Minutes, or discussion with 60 Minutes, and Biden saying they'd send American troops to Taiwan.
Yeah, the one comment I would make about China's decision in that is, I think China realizes that very possibly the United States would defend Taiwan, but the question becomes, how effectively could they protect Taiwan? I don't think very effectively, personally. The only way they could protect Taiwan effectively would be to threaten the use of bombs against mainland China. But I don't see that happening. You know, there is a certain blessing in weapons of mass destruction, and that comes exactly from the definition of the term mass destruction. you're talking about destruction so, so huge that you're almost guaranteed starting the end of the world, Jim.
Well, and so this was the original U.S. strategic nuclear policy was mm-hmm. was called MAD, Mutually Assured Destruction.
Right.
That was the policy. It was a stated policy that we would, we went to war, everyone would die.
Mm-hmm.
And then it evolved over time to deterrence, and then we've had this lull in nuclear threat for since the end of the Cold War, end of the 90s, where people didn't really take it very seriously. So there's always a possibility that this could get ugly, and the Russians could use some sort of tactical nuclear advantage and hope that they could get away with that. The problem is, I don't think that they could get away with that without a complete mobilization. The few allies that they
Wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. You say you don't think they could get away with that without a complete mobilization. Mobilization against whom?
Oh, against the entire NATO, EU, United States. And even allies that they have right now, Turkey is a NATO ally, and they would be forced to actually participate with NATO, with NATO countries,
mm-hmm.
and they probably would, because it's just too close to them. We're talking about on the Black Sea, and you've got Bulgaria, Romania, you've got the Poland, Hungary, all these former Eastern Bloc satellite countries that are now free. They're scared to death of the Russians, and then you've got the more appeasing, French, German, kind of Western Europeans that have been more amenable to dealing with Russia because they always were a little closer to them, and that sets up a very interesting dynamic. But the problem with Russia, with Putin, is he doesn't need them all unified. He can't have them all unified. So then he would have to combine with China and say, okay, we're basically reaching a precipice of world war, and if China took action in Taiwan, if North Korea took action in South Korea, then you've actually completely unleashed any modem of, and we do have world war, because the Japanese will be involved, the South Koreans will be involved, the Australians will be involved.
Now, the South Koreans have already offered China 100,000 troops to go in to utilize in Ukraine.
No, North Koreans have.
North Korea is what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, and the North Koreans, at least that's what the reported press was.
Yeah.
The Chechens have sent troops, they've got the Wagner group in there, but here's the reality, Al. Nobody really wants to go into a losing cause.
No.
And the Russians can only fund so much of this, no matter how much money they're making off fuel and energy. And it would be very difficult for the North Koreans, both logistically and, of course, they'd have to interoperate. And I've talked about those problems between, just Air Force, Russian Air Force and Army forces. Well, throw that into North Korean soldiers that don't speak any Russian, that don't speak any and have no logistics sustainment capacity or capability. It's an unrealistic proposition. It's very unrealistic because there's no way they could actually sustain themselves, the North Koreans, that far away from their homeland shores. And there's no way the Russians are actually keeping up sustaining their own forces right now.
Yeah.
Really difficult time. Well, then you try interoperability. Throwing bodies into a problem will not help you.
Yeah.
So
long story short, Russia really is between a rock and a hard spot right now. Putin has to figure out a way that he can rectify or at least make his decision a little bit more possible for Russia. I don't see how that's going to happen. I know a lot of our listeners disagree with me. A lot of our listeners feel that Russia is 100% correct in invading Ukraine, but I don't agree with that.
Well, I think
most of our
listeners feel
that Russia should be able to take over the Ukraine.
I think that it's not possible for them to do that, and I said it from the beginning, because the Ukrainians do have an identity. They have a cultural identity, they've got a language identity, they've got a very deep historical identity and a lot of frustration. And now it's even a very clear frustration with Russian occupation, even in these small areas. So in spite of the Russian-speaking population that did sit in the eastern areas in the Crimea, a lot of people didn't want this war there other than just the activists, the ones that were being paid by Russia to actually support the previous 2014 invasion and then the follow-on wars in the eastern area. Most people just want to live their lives.
Yeah.
And they're not too worried about who's leading them if they're able to leave their lives without war. But at this point, there's a big problem, and they see it. So the Russians' ability to take Crimea, it's not possible. The probability of taking Ukraine is not possible.
Right.
The possibility of someone coming in and brokering a deal for the Russians to keep Crimea and move out of the other occupied areas, now that's a higher probability right now, I think. It would mean obviously a waste of time for the Russians for this entire invasion. But I think that's a possibility with maybe, a third party, possibly the Turks, Erdogan, or someone that would be in support of both sides negotiating a deal that would stop the, some sort of a ceasefire and then work its way into a some sort of referendum. Of course, the Russians are announcing this referendum this week, which no one's going to abide by, and it's fraudulent. And they may be surprised with the outcome with it, actually, if they were honest about it. So it's a tough situation. It's a tough situation globally because it doesn't take away any of the pressures that have already been set in place because of energy. Europeans are going to struggle significantly over the winter with energy costs. No matter what happens, if the war stopped tomorrow, that's not going to change the long-term problems, the economic problems that exist. And when you start talking about U.S. economic decline right now, and we are seeing a significant economic decline, the Fed is coming out with new numbers almost daily when they're posting what their possibilities are and what their expectation 3 weeks ago, 0.3% growth in the third quarter. I'm sorry. Yeah, 0.3% growth. They've already, got that down. The labor issues that we're facing, you're seeing already start to see layoffs. You're seeing a lot of problems. So none of the global economic issues go away.
No.
None of the energy issues go away. And then you've got this continuation of expenditures on warfare, both the United States funding Ukraine and, of course, the Europeans doing the same. And then the Russians, their expenditure. This is just a continued recipe. For disaster.
Jim, let's wrap this up with some comments from you about the Fed raising the prime rate to 4%. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, well, I think it's inevitable. I think people are talking about, it should be, they're betting on a 0.75, a 75 basis points, 0.75% rate. I actually would not be surprised if they just said, hey, we got to nip this in the bud. We've been behind the power curve on this from the beginning. In their mind, and raise it a full point.
Yeah.
Regardless, you're seeing core inflation rise. You're seeing housing prices decline. We already two consecutive quarters of decline.
Yeah.
There's going to be a decline in the third quarter almost inevitably. There's probably going to be a decline in the fourth quarter. The big problem right now is you raise the rates like this. People have been throwing away free money for a while, but that reality is coming to haunt everyone in the financial industry.
You
may see another liquidity crisis. And with that liquidity crisis in the system, you could throw all these pieces together and say, oh man, we're
yeah, no, we're I don't, I don't disagree with that. Jim, we got to wrap it up.
Yep.
A couple of issues are very apparent that are going on right now. One is Ukraine is getting more and more tenuous. That's almost not a strong enough word. And the other one is the economy in the United States certainly isn't getting any better. Jimmy, thank you so much.
You bet, Al.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics. We will be back in a moment.